Welcome to the Healthy Podcast, where we invite you to invest in your well-being and unlock the secrets of vibrant health, peak performance, and wellness. Join us, Sebastian Mirau and Johannes Kettelhout, co-founders of Australia and New Zealand's leading wellness company, as we dive deep into the science, strategies, and stories that empower you to live your healthiest, happiest life. Whether you are a CEO, high achiever, entrepreneur, elite athlete, health enthusiast, scientist, or self-improvement seeker, together we will explore the cutting edge of biohacking techniques and holistic health practices with world-class experts that optimize your mind, body, and spirit. With each episode, you will walk away with practical and actionable steps to integrate in your daily life. Are you ready? Let's elevate your well-being.
Hi, everyone. I've got Christine Spicer here today, who is an absolute expert in something that is called human design. She worked under the master of human design, who since passed away. She does online courses, in-person courses, courses with groups, which I've been participating in the past as well. And she's really, really focused on getting this message out there that this is a tool to understand yourself better and to understand others, especially your kids. And when you're being a parent, how do you actually interact with your kids because of the type of human design you are? So, Christine, thank you so much for being part of this.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, Sebastian. Really good to see you.
And you. So when we talk about human design, then probably one thought that comes up for people is that it's quite similar to, let's say, a horoscope or, you know, what's my zodiac or that type of thing. How would you compare that? I always thought that's an easy one to sort of contrast it to give really like there are major differences between the two.
Yeah, well, one of the major differences is that human design also gives us an insight into our psychology, but also into our body. You know, it is for the form, it's for the body. And it is a new methodology. It's only been around since 1987, but it really brings forward this whole journey of embodiment, of coming into awakening through the form, through the body. And as soon as our bodies are more comfortable and the way that we move in the world is more comfortable and we're more healthy, then consciousness can actually start to accelerate. And so that's why human design is so much about connecting with our authority in our body, and that supports our psychology. Yeah. So gotcha. It's so different from astrology for that reason.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe also more accessible. Like if you actually had some training, you can continue to understand yourself much more, and the system is much more accessible in the sense that you don't have to be like a master or offer it to see what strategy works for you, what is your strengths, what is your weakness, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the other main differences is that it's really practical. It is something that you can try out. And in order to try it out, you don't need to study the whole system. You just have to have a transmission of your design. You know, you just have to have someone decode and transmit that for you. And then you've got what you need to engage with life through this lens of human design and see, so what do I experiment? What do I experience in my life when I try this out? So from that perspective, it's also really practical.
Right. And I know that you're quite an unusual human design type, or not unusual, well, less common, let's say. And that might also mean that, you know, overall, life before human design might have been quite challenging. So could you share with us just a few things that you say really made the difference to your, where it really assists you to, you know, express yourself properly in the world and feel comfortable about the person that you are?
Yeah, I mean, it was huge for me because, you know, before human design, I had tried all sorts of things. You know, getting to know myself and understanding myself and other people had been a real interest and passion of mine. So I'd been involved in leadership development. I'd tried all sorts of things from shamanic journeying through to journey work, through to, you know, yoga, meditation, so many different methodologies to understand myself, psychology, coaching, all sorts of things. And I actually was also an expert in executive recruitment. So all the profiling tools, you know, the profiling tools of who am I and how does my psychology work? You know, so I'd been on a huge journey, but there was always an aspect that I couldn't get to grips with. You know, there was always, well, this bit fits, but that doesn't quite. And, you know, this doesn't really express me, but even though there's so much that is. And so when I came across human design and found out, well, I actually belong to 1.5% of the population.
Wow.
That really answered a question. It's like, ah, okay, so all these different things where some of it worked, but it didn't quite fit. Well, no wonder, because those things are often designed, you know, by and for people who maybe have slightly more or less rare aura type. Yeah, so for me, just knowing that actually really helped me, because then it helped me somehow move away from this fear that I was somehow a bit arrogant. You know, I had this fear, you know, why do I think I'm so different? Why do I think I'm, you know, is it arrogant that I feel like these things somehow don't work for me? You know, I had a fear that there was something wrong with me. And when I found out, actually, I'm 1.5% of the population, then I really took that seriously, that, okay. So then I was able to drop into this truth, the deep truth, which is, so the way I'm designed to live, the way I'm designed to make decisions, the way I'm, the speed at which I'm designed to do things, the volume that I'm here to engage with in my life is so much different from the majority. And that gave me a lot of permission to slow down, because I had been living my life at speed. I'd been living my life, you know, kind of with an abundance of capacity that ended up making me unwell. You know, so when I met human design, I was quite unwell because I'd been a super high achiever because reflectors, I'm a reflector type, and reflectors can be unlimited and can be anything. But the trouble is we can't be everything. And I was trying to be everything.
Right.
So huge support for me in that knowledge of how to start to reorientate my life and care for myself.
Yeah. So what would be a like everyday example where you had a misperception of how you're meant to function, and then you realized actually my particular human design type functions differently in this situation?
So, you know, I had thought that I was here to be very intuitive and very responsive, you know, that I would get these strong intuitions about things and strong gut responses about things. And I thought, you know, I had this mantra, you know, do it now to be very effective, and then to use my willpower, you know, when, you know, use my willpower then to push myself to do things so that I could achieve, because I always had my list of all my goals and all the things I wanted to achieve. And I would just, you know, one after the other, I would go through those and go for them and achieve them. But it didn't make me well, and it didn't make me happy. It did make me very successful. But then that asked, it really posed the question, what is success, in inverted commas?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was about 43 when I found human design, and I'd been through that whole arc of incredible career success and everything, but my health wasn't good and I wasn't happy, and I knew something was wrong. So this helped me, it helped me realize, well, all of that I've just listed, that might be for some other type and some other designs, but it's actually not for me. Success comes to me in a different way.
Gotcha. Yeah. So if we talk about the different types, which ones are there? I believe there are four, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they're four aura types. So they are the description of the way that you're, the aura that you're sitting in, inside, and the way that aura is designed to then move in the world and engage in the world. So it's like your little bubble, your personal bubble you're sitting inside, and it says, okay, if you learn to engage in the world based on this aura that's giving out a message, then your whole movement in life is different. So the four types are, so the reflector, which I've just talked about, which is 1.5% of the population. And if we go then to the type which is there are the most of, then that's the generator and manifesting generator type. And that's nearly 70% of the population. And that's a big open enveloping aura that really, you know, takes everything in like a sponge and is here to respond to life. And of course, this is the creative energy on the planet. That aura is coming from the buzz of the life force. And so that buzz of the life force is creative, productive energy. And if somebody is a generator or a manifesting generator, then putting that energy to its most potent use is the most important thing that they can do in their life because it creates more energy.
Oh, wow.
And on the other hand, putting their energy into something that is not correct for them drains their energy, frustrates them, and makes them deeply, deeply unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so this is, of course, the frequency we live on the planet, this frustrated energy on the planet where so many generators and manifesting generators just really don't like what they have to do every day. They don't like their jobs. They don't like their work. They don't like. And then they're dragging themselves around and we're all living in that frustrated low frequency. But you know what? When I meet a generator or a manifesting generator who loves and is full of life and correctly engaged with what they're doing, wow, the vibe that puts out and is a treat. That's beautiful. That's what
I love. Yes, yes. Oh, that's nice. So nice. And I personally have seen a lot of empirical evidence of you know, that the system really works. Has anyone done sort of a more scientific sort of look at that? I always start there when, you know, there's so many modalities out there that I have on the show. And quite a few of those, there's just not, you know, science is slow. And especially if it's sophisticated topic that you go into, reductionist science, scientific approach is just really hard to apply to those. But to me, it would be terrible if that means we wouldn't use this because there is not the proof. But just out of interest, like how much have we looked into that from a more traditional science point of view?
Well, it's pretty interesting, actually, because even just the statistics of human design almost prove it, you know. So we say, and this is what we're talking about at the moment, aren't we, these different aura types, right? So you can take any representative slice of the population and put in the charts, you know, which is based on birth data, for 100 people, and you will generally get about 70% generators, manifesting generators, about 22% projectors, 9% manifestors, and 1.5% of reflectors. And even to the point that I remember doing about 100 readings, human design readings, before I came across a reflector. You know, it's really interesting. Yes. You know, some slices of the population are, are slightly skewed because of the interest level. For example, I remember going to Luminate Festival, which I think you've been to as well.
One of my favorite ones in New Zealand, yes.
And I remember, yes, that's right. And I remember there doing a lot of readings and there was a lot of manifestors there. So manifestors are only 9% of the population. But when I really looked at, well, why are there so many, a disproportionate number of manifestors? It's because this was this festival that was very much based on, you know, people getting in and kind of being independent and initiating and being, you know, self-empowered and doing, doing things, you know, their own way. It was very supportive of individuals. And so lots of manifestors flocked there. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if you take your street or your town and put all the birth data in, you're going to get this aura spread, which proves it in a way.
It's incredible. Yeah,
even people who are not interested in human design. Yeah.
The determination of what you are is really just related to where you were born and at what time, right?
That's right. Where you were born and at what time. Yeah. And that creates the way that, the planets were positioned at that time. So it's not just at the time you were born, it's also 3 months before you're born. So with human design, it's different to astrology because there are two calculations. One calculation is of when the body's ready. This is this unconscious aspect of the deep part of you that forms your genetic inheritance of your body. And that is related to your grandparents, your parents, your grandparents, you know, your line going right back. It's your bloodline. And then there's the second imprint, which is that moment you're born, and that is your soul coming in and joining the body, and it's actually called the personality.
Yeah.
And these two parts come together, and that creates this bio-spiritual map of what we call the body graph. And in that body graph, you can see the configurations of energy of what is reliably you and where are the places that you're vulnerable, open to conditioning. And it's the combination of those two things that allow us to say, ah, so am I operating as my true self, my potential, or is my conditioning running me? And in my case, my conditioning had been running me, you know. I'm a reflector. I'm completely open. So there's 9 centers in the body graph, and they all, for a reflector, are open because we are mirrors. But, of course, yeah. That means then we're vulnerable. We're amplifying everything around us. We're taking it in and amplifying. And where was I? I was working in a, you know, in an organization of high achievers. So guess who was the highest achiever? You know, I was amplifying it all. That can't go on forever. It's like a balloon, yeah? It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you know what happens to a balloon when it gets, you know, pop. Yeah.
You know, I did look a little bit into sort of like how personalities are formed based on their birthday and position where they are. And I remember Steiner would say, like, look, you know, it's where you are in your space, in the space. And, you know, there are probably many examples. I didn't look into what human design exactly explains. So although I know there is something written about that. But, you know, it's basically the energy of the place in space. What do you reckon would happen if someone actually is born on Mars?
Oh, yeah, well, then that'd be different, because it would be a whole different design. Because if they're born on Mars, the position of the Earth and the Sun is no longer the same in relation to Mars, you see, because if you imagine, here we are, we're born on Earth, right? So where we are is always relative to the position of all the planets that are around us. But most of all, it's relevant to this, the Earth that we're on, because we're on the Earth and all of the neutrinos, which is the dark matter in the universe, which carries information, is streaming through the planets and through us and through the Earth and going out the other side, right? And that imprint, which comes from that dark matter, the neutrinos that carry mass, that are traveling through the universe, it's non-atomic, are interacting with our auras all the time. When we take our first breath, we breathe in the prana of life, and there's an imprint at that moment which says, ah, okay, now the soul and the body are together in this life on Earth.
Wow.
And this is at a moment in time.
But does that mean that in a sense, you know, if we just, a couple of assumptions, so, you know, we have multiple lives, of course, we have a soul. A soul is really hard to grasp for science. You know, they can't really explain that. But, you know, a lot of experimentation systems and so on have been found, including the neutrinos, that this is actually something that exists and does something to us at the point of birth and 3 months before that. Are you then saying that, so information flows through, I mean, there's a lot of scientific experiments that show that information exists even in a vacuum. And you can show that, like, the DNA phantom, for example, is one, like, you know, you experiment with really small parts and you take the small parts out and it still grows the same DNA, even though nothing is in this vacuum anymore and stuff like that. Okay, let's just say that's a given. You're then saying that in particular in those 2 points of time, 3 months before birth and at birth, information flows through us as it normally does even when we're not born. But at the moment where we take our first breath, then it sort of gets imprinted. Does that then mean that this is what you got for the rest of your life? Or is there also still an influence of these neutrinos streaming through space and time all the time? And it depends on where you are on Earth, how you function, meaning it matters where you are, or is it really?
And so it's both. So, okay, so this is what's so fascinating about one of the many things that's fascinating about human design. So, okay, so we've got our imprint. That imprint is our potential, right? It's our potential. And we may or may not live that potential, but there will be a version of us that comes through from that imprint, either a coherent authentic version or a less coherent, not authentic version. Okay, that's the imprint. Now, the neutrinos don't stop. They're still coming, right? They're still coming all the time. The planets are moving and we're getting neutrinos streaming through those planets and coming in and having an effect on our body graph. And so this is conditioning. So this is influence coming from the planets. That's not us. Okay. So astrology says all that influence that's coming from the planets that is not us is going to determine our life, right? This is what's going to happen because this is where this planet is. So this is what you're going to experience. What human design says is, nah, it's different to that. You have your imprint. And if you operate based on your inner authority or your process that is the way that your aura is designed to move in the world, then those neutrinos are still going to influence you. You can experience them, but you've got your umbrella up. You're protected, yeah? So it doesn't matter what's going on there. You can still get your life. And you say, this is how we break out of the matrix. You know, that conditioning that's coming from the planets that is not us is not here to just be, we're not here to be puppets of it. We're here to be ourselves. We're here to be our potential. And this is how we become our potential when we then tune in with our own personal instructions that are inside of us. We come into relationship with our own authority, which is the native imprint of the way we were imprinted at the moment of our birth. Yeah. And we animate that in our life and we become ourselves. And it doesn't matter what's happening in the planets then. It can push you around, but if you're really, really rooted in your authority, then you get your life. And this is what human design offers, that you get your life. It's not the life that your mind thinks that you can get, you know, because your mind will say, you know, we'll all say, oh, I want, you know, these two words, I want, I will. Well, the I is really generally the mind because that's the conscious part. But there's this unconscious part, which is our closest part. It's actually our body, the unconscious, that holds all these potentials of who we can, who we really truly are and can be. Yeah. And when we tune into our authority, then we get access to that. And that part, which our authority is connected with the part of the totality that's on our side, you know. It's the part of the totality that is, ah, so I step forward into this decision in full consciousness of my own true being and life of totality comes and supports me.
Got it.
Because I'm stepping onto my path, you know, my fractal, which, you know, human design puts you on your fractal of where you're designed to be. And on that path are all the people, places, and events that your imprint is designed for. But so many people live their lives off their path. They're over here. I want, and then I go get based on my mind telling me. Mm-hmm. So they're going along over here on this other track, yeah? But on this track are not all the people, places, opportunities, and events that they're designed for. And so it's like, why do I keep meeting resistance? Why is life so frustrating? Or why am I feeling so bitter or disappointed? Why am I feeling so angry? It's because you're not in your life.
I have so what one of the types is called a manifester. And to me, that's a really pure type. That's probably the wrong word. You probably wouldn't agree with that. It's just a specific type where I find one significant aspect of them is that normally they speak first. Would you call that? Because then I tell a little bit of a story that I experienced with them. But overall, yep. they're right. And I actually
They're the initiators. They're the people there to open the energy, initiating. Yeah.
What is fascinating to me is I remember arriving actually at a workshop of yours some years ago, and I was standing with four other people in the car park. We just arrived, introduced ourselves, and another person stepped towards us and we just stopped, and I really felt sort of like spellbound and couldn't say anything. And it was a little bit awkward because normally the group opens up to the new person. Hi, how are you? You know, It's arrived as well. Very good. How was your ride? Whatever. And but this didn't happen. And so it became awkward straight away because no one really spoke. And then we said hi. And you know, eventually it sort of like flew a little bit. And then we found out that the person that came last was a manifester. And she said, don't worry, this happens all the time to me. And then later on in the workshop, I think we picked this up again, this topic. And the reason why is because energetically, and when you look really into how they are built, how we were built, and none of us was the same type there, is that we respond. I think we must have been all, you know, the responding type. And so she was the one that was meant to speak first. And it was really noticeable. It was a bodily experience, really feeling like, okay, you know, like I'm waiting until she sort of almost invites me to speak. And then it's really easy. Then I can talk forever. But, you know, there was this mechanic there. And to me, this was always such an obvious aha moment. And ever since, when people seem to have that thing going on, and if it has often to do with that they are that type that like to speak first or just naturally speak first.
Yeah, that's right. And and we're talking about the manifestor type, which is only about 9% of the population. And it's so important for people, if they are manifestors, to know their manifestors, because they have such an unusual aura. Their aura is really different. And this is kind of what you will have been experiencing too. You know, the person hadn't even done anything, but they bring this auric bubble with them. And that auric bubble is actually a closed bubble. And it's a bubble that pushes everything out. It's actually called repelling. And, of course, people can be quite upset when they hear, oh, I've got a closed repelling aura. But the thing is, it's not about the negative. Well, it can be about the negative aspects of repelling if they don't understand how to use their aura in a positive way. But the way I like to explain it is that, you know, these people who are manifestors are here as independent energy. And they are here to open up the energy and to go first and to initiate, you know, to speak first, you know, and to inform people. And their aura is always informing first. And really what it's informing is, here I come, are you ready for me? And the repellent part of it is just so that they can get their space, you know. It's like having a raincoat. You know, if you have a raincoat, would you rather have a raincoat that just lets all the rain in, or would you rather have a water repellent raincoat? Mm. Okay. Well, of course, if you have an aura that has this ability to just let everything move away from it, it means that you're free. You see, manifestors want to be free. They want to be free to go ahead, be the one who's initiating, to be the one who's actually taking that initiative, and their aura helps them do it. But if they don't take their role and step into being that person who's first, well, then they don't understand what's happening because their impact does it for them and they think there's something wrong with them. And so then they shrink back and become disempowered. And then they're not in their gift. And then that's very sad because, you know, there's so many manifestors in this world who've just been beaten down by people who don't understand what this aura is for and how amazing it can be for the rest of us, because they're open the way for the rest of us so that people who are actually designed to respond can bring their creative energy along, and the door's already open.
Yeah. And in a practical sense, if you understand that about yourself, and for example, you are a manifestor, doesn't mean that you have to have a monologue before you start a conversation. But it's normally that this person just naturally opens up the floor and said, oh, I had a really good morning. What about you guys, or whatever it is. It's like, it's not that it has to be like a power game or something like that. It's just the natural flow of a conversation will indicate that if that person talks and then somehow ask a question, which is like, For me, being a generator, you know, like responding to something is very easy for me. Responding to a problem, a question, you know, a statement, whatever it might be. But if they understand that, then, you know, that there's no problem. And it doesn't feel like a power game. It's just a struggle when people actually don't understand. It's just how it is. I speak first in the family and it doesn't have to be long. And then,
They give information. It can be, wow, that motorway was busy and, oh, I'm pleased I got here. You know, it can be as simple as that, you know.
Yeah.
But it is breaking open the energy for other people then to come in. Yeah. And they're not rules. And this is what I always want to say to people. This is not rules that you have to follow. This is actually an energetic interchange. Play with. See, what happens when I engage my energy this way? And what happens when I engage my energy that way? And you experiment with it and play with it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah. So we've spoken about those three types, and I guess we need to mention the other 22%, because otherwise if there's anyone listening who's a projector, they're going to feel, why haven't they talked about me? No. Should we do that?
Yeah, great idea.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the other type, which is the 22%, are projectors. And, of course, so they're only 22%, so they are also in the minority. And they're the people watching life, you know. So these are the people who have this incredible gift, potentially, of being able to notice what's happening in the energy and read the energy. And they're really here to see and read that energy so that they can guide it, you know. And the, you know, the difficulty for them is they do see the efficiencies and inefficiencies of the way that energy is being used. And so, and yet they have an aura that goes in, it's very focused, and it focuses and penetrates, it goes in and reads and scans people. And you can imagine if someone's intensely looking at you and kind of reading and scanning you, you might be able to feel that. And, of course, the problems start when these people then start adding words and offering a bit of advice about what they've seen and what could be better and what could be different. And it's usually quite personal, because it's often very on the button. But, of course, these people, their aura is an aura that needs to wait until this wisdom that they have is actually invited. You know, wait until they notice somebody actually wants to hear this, someone's open. And when that happens and they get invited, well, what is it you think? Well, what do you see? Well, then they can really share their guidance, because they're here to guide. They're here studying life and they're here to guide life. But, of course, the difficulty with being a projector, when you don't know you're a projector, is there is this tendency to amp up the energy and to feel like you need to do everything yourself. So a lot of projectors are just exhausted, because they're, you know, they're really living a life that makes them very bitter. So instead of feeling successful, they're just exhausted and bitter, because they're trying to overdo everything rather than wait, guide what needs to be done. Yeah, so that's the third, that's the last type that we haven't talked about.
You know, in terms of the receptivity, where that manifests really, really clearly in my life is really the sleep pattern of. So I have a projector in my family, and I have four manifesting generators, which are really, really high energy. And then I'm a generator, so it's a little bit in between. But, you know, if I would put the two children, like any child other than the projector, no, projector and manifesting generator together in the same room to sleep, normally the projector can't sleep. And, you know, you might think, oh, yeah, this is just excitement because, you know, another child is sleeping in that room and so on. But knowing this child really well, if it's sleeping what's called aura-free, like, you know, by itself, you know, with quite a distance to the others, it will fall asleep almost instantly as it is alone and tired enough, of course. Very different to the strategy of a manifesting generator, which really has to run out of energy, which means if there's energy left, it will have to read a book, you know, or do something, some thinking before it will fall asleep. Mm. And having three of those, I can see that really easily, that, you know, that they all get really entertained with books at the end of the day. Even, you know, two-year-olds still do that, versus the one that is a projector that is just, and I know if I said to her, how about you go to bed right now? Then you wake up earlier. Okay. Switch light off. Within a minute or two, she's almost gone. And that's something that strikes me as really fortunate for her, but also good to know, you know, because if I would put all these kids together with her, she would be sleep deprived eventually, because she can't help it but sense around her whether, you know, consciously or unconsciously, and therefore stay awake.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is why it's so helpful for parenting. I mean, to know your children's designs and to know, you know, how we are similar or different just in our aura mechanics to our children. Because we tend to want to, you know, of course, love and support our children. And the things that work for us are often the things that we think will work for them. But, of course, if they're a different type, that is often not the case. And that can lead to a lot of frustration with parents trying to do what they feel is best, but, you know, ending up. So your children are very lucky. I mean, isn't that great that you have that insight, Sebastian, and you can really support your projector child, because it really does mean that she's going to grow up, you know, more true to who she is. She's not going to have to get to that burnout in order to then start to undo all the damage of being brought up as a manifesting generator, which is what happens to most projectors.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense. So I remember you talking about certain questions that invite different types. So for kids, how would you open up, like, you know, how parents would report is like, oh, you know, how was school sort of thing? And kids don't really open up. And we explored that this might be actually something that has to do with how you ask and when you ask. Do you have like a quick example for each type of how you would ask? Because in flip side, this also might indicate that you know what your child is, what works, what doesn't.
Yeah. So, I mean, and of course you can experiment if you don't know what your child is, but of course you can always just go to the free online, you know, you can go to an online system and put in the chart and bring it up and it'll tell you what type the child is. So, okay. So for example, with anyone who's a generator or a manifesting generator, which has a sacral life force energy, which is here to respond, it's really helpful to ask, give options and ask yes, no questions, you know. Rather than open questions. Because if you say, oh, so what happened at school today? There's nothing to respond to. They're like, oh, what happened at school today? And just sends them straight into their head, right? And there's, and then they have to make something up, right? Whereas if you say, oh, so did you sport this morning? You know, if you know they did sport this morning, or yeah. Can you tell me a bit about that drama class you went to? Or, you know, was there something that that you loved today? They can always start with a yes, no, but the most important thing is they can feel in their body, you know, because the generator or the manifesting generator has this connection with the energy, which is either a rising energy, or a and this actually switches their body on. What it does is it actually gives more energy for them to be in a conversation with you. If you are asking them all these open questions all the time, it's hard for them. They're like, oh, you know, I've got to make something up. And then they just switch off. There's no energy generated. Whereas projectors, it's the other way around. You know, open question for projectors. Projectors will be annoyed with you if you're really narrowing them down to ask these questions, you know, because they have this open life force, and the open life force needs to explore, you know, needs to, you know, to see what they notice. And what they'll be interested in is more the unusual rather than the usual. And so if you ask them, you know, what was the best thing that happened today, or what did you love, or, you know, depending on, you know, maybe their emotional, it might be what felt the best, or, you know, and then they have to really engage and see what they notice. And what you're doing is you're helping them notice from their own intelligence. And projectors are here to really refine their intelligence about noticing. And so what you're doing is you're actually helping develop their consciousness by doing that.
Brilliant. And then how about reflectors?
Reflectors are definitely open questions as well. And so in the same way as projectors, it's open questions and giving them time. So reflectors might sometimes not come out with anything. Let them have time. I'd love to hear about this. And, you know, and what did you notice or whatever? And we can talk about it later if you want to. Yeah, you know, see what you notice. And, you know, because often there'll be some things that click through, and if you are going to get the deepest answer, it might not be immediate, or it could be. You know, the reflectors are so varied. It really depends what the moon is doing as to whether there's something that's going to be there now or not, because they're here for very slow decision-making and deep processing. Time is always a...
While talking about this, and I hope we will touch on all the different aspects of what makes up human design. And one is the type. We've talked about this quite a bit. When you talk about the moon, that's the authority that rules you. And we can talk about that in a moment. But something that I pondered on for many, many years is like my childhood friend who just couldn't make decisions. It was great for me, I thought, because it meant that in the end, we always were doing what I wanted because he just couldn't quite make up his mind. And so this was from the year of like, you know, age of two up to, I don't know, when I started to study in my 20s, we would have a lot of time with each other, traveling also, and it was normally quite pleasant. But at the same time, I was wondering whether we were actually doing what he wanted to do. But never could quite understand it. And at one stage in my 30s, I saw him, you know, he's back in Germany, and we did his human design chart, and his authority was the moon. And what that means is that it takes up to 30 days to make a decision. So when you're in the sandpit saying, should we, you know, play with diggers or with cars, or was this like, And it was such a, because I know this person so well, and I know the decision making is, for me, from the outside, felt always really slow, if not painful. It really opened my eyes. I can't believe, because this is the slowest way. When you say your authority of making decisions is the moon, this is as slow as it gets, I guess. And then there are other ones, and maybe you want to talk about those as well. But, you know, what do you think about this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that wonderful in a way? That is part of a study, isn't it? That says, well, this person, they didn't know that they were a reflector. They didn't know that they had to wait 28 plus or minus days for the moon to actually activate all the different 64 parts of their body graph in order to deeply embody whatever was correct for them. That child didn't know that, and yet the behavior really showed it, and you experienced that in your life. So, you know, for me, these examples of when people are being what they natively are designed to be, even though they've got no idea about human design, these are ways of proving it. So I mean, you know, reflectors, they always need to take their time. But it's not every decision that takes 28 days, because in the end, it's the moon that brings the activations of the different parts of the body graph. And the authority doesn't reside in one place in the body graph. It's a fully embodied holistic intelligence, which is felt in the whole body and being, rather than just in, you know, one part like the gut or the emotional solar plexus, for example. Yeah, so, that's the unusual reflector. There are seven different authorities, though.
Yeah, and some are instant, right?
And I mean, I think this really helps us understand why some modalities, for example, work for some people and not others. So we could say, you know, for example, there's a lot of support from a system, you know, like the power of now, Eckhart Tolle, who is talking about being present and being now. Well, yeah, there are a whole lot of people who are designed to be making their decisions now, because those are those people who have like either a gut response, which is their authority, or they have maybe a splenic intuition or instinct that is their authority. And those are the people who are designed to really be making those intuitive decisions now and not relitigating it and not feeling about it and not processing it. They're designed to be now. And so if you're one of those people and you pick up Eckhart Tolle's work and you resonate with it, well, wow, that's going to be such an amazing support for you. But if you're a reflector, or if you have emotional authority and you read that work and think, okay, I'm going to be intuitive, I'll be instinctive, new decision will come towards me, and I'm just going to intuitively go with my gut now, well, you're looking at disaster in your life, because it's the worst thing you could do. Because in that case, you actually have a process, which is a longer process, which is a feeling process, which has all sorts of layers and complexities that have to be on board for you to be on board. And so, it's human design is called the science of human differentiation. And I reckon it's something that saves so many relationships and marriages, because just understanding and accepting that we have different time frames for things can be taking a huge amount of stress out of life for people.
Is there, are some of the decision processes and authorities more common in humanity than others?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, emotional authority, which is solar plexus authority, is the most prevalent authority on the planet. And this is needing to tune in with our emotional state and let that state move through layers and really digest how we feel about things in the solar plexus and wait for that clarity, that moment of clarity where we just feel neutral. We're not super excited and we're not dreading and we're not everything in between, but we've been able to feel all of that on our roller coaster of high to low, but we come to this place that's an inner settled place where the whole of us is there. And that then puts out waves of this emotionally intelligent, settled, neutral energy into the world around us. And this is what allows people to come to fully conscious emotional decision. And that's nearly 50% of the population. That's process. You know, if you have emotional authority, you have a process to get clear. And that process takes some time and needs patience. And of course, if you think about it, so there are so many people in the world who just lurch at life from a high or a low. You know, they're either super excited or super upset about something and then they react.
Yeah.
And this is never going to bring the, you know, the beauty of emotional awareness with it. And it's always going to put out ripples of reactiveness into the world and create more reactiveness. So we're living in this world where most people are going too fast in life. 50% at least are going too fast with their decisions and never coming to a place where they're fully in their decision and then living regret from reaction.
I remember you telling me some time ago that, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically if that is your authority for making decisions and you have to go through a process to really know for yourself and feel correct of like, yes, this is the decision I stand behind. I feel really good about making this decision. If you jump the gun and make a decision earlier, it doesn't actually matter whether it's a right or wrong decision, but because you have not followed the process, you will never feel completely complete and agreed with it. And I think if we reflect back, I guess it's only for 50% of the time. I'm just thinking about significant choices and how we feel about that afterwards. Relationship is complex, so I don't know if you want to go there and say like, oh, you know, I took it slowly and, you know, I had some thoughts and we had to think about it, you know, a couple of times before we really said, yes, we will be together or you know, get married or whatever. And, you know, more similar to big ticket items like buying a house, you know, like did we take our time or did we feel rushed to buy it and did it therefore never feel completely the right decision, or I didn't own the decision because I didn't go through my process to really feel like I've dotted all the I's, you know, across the T's and I know this is the right decision. So to me, this is super, super helpful. Just know that this process is required regardless of what the outcome is. But if you go into it, but it's like, I don't feel right with that. It's frustrating for me too, because sometimes I think like, this is such a good opportunity. I know it's right. But at the same time, it's like, but it doesn't feel right, even though logically it makes sense. And then eventually, if I really give it the time, it's all good.
Yeah. And you know, it's so good to hear that you really get that because so many people with emotional authority, they'll start feeling their way through a decision and then they come to a point where they mentally know this is right or mentally know this is wrong, but actually their body and their whole being is not on board yet. And at that point, if they jump in, then they only take a part of them with them. And the experience is thin in a way in comparison. And also the nervous system, and this is the point about the nervous system. If you have emotional authority, it's your nervous system that needs time to actually be fully there and not in a nervous state that creates more nervousness, right? And so even if your mind thinks this is the right decision and your nervous system hasn't got it yet, yeah, you're always betraying your body and you'll never be fully comfortable, no matter how good, in inverted commas, the decision is.
That's amazing. I'm actually thinking about someone I traveled recently with, and he is he loves his breakfast, and he loves to take time for his breakfast and make a sort of like a little bit of a strategy of what to eat first and then second and what last and so on. And I know that if he gets the right time for that, and there might be other reasons for it, but, you know, I would love to actually read and see what his, well, you know, what his process is meant to be, because when he gets it right, you know, his day is set up for success because he has, you know, made good decisions. You know, he took his time to decide what he eats, yeah, and so on. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, and look, there's so much happening in all different modalities to support the nervous system. And I think, you know, this is, in a way, this acknowledgement, even if people don't know about human design, it's an acknowledgement that this nervous system, which is evolving in humanity, needs attention and needs support. And it's the modern life and the fast pace of technology and all sorts of things that are actually, you know, pushing people to go faster than is good for them if they have emotional authority. And so, you know, this emotional authority is not what has been true in humanity for thousands of years. You know, there was a time, let me put it another way. The emotional authority of awareness is what is still evolving in humanity. So it's the least, it's not fully developed yet, but it is where we're going on an evolutionary level. And so life as it was, that was always run by the mind, is not really yet built to allow our nervous systems to process life through all of its awareness. So that's why we have so much trauma and we have so much emotional ill health and mental ill health in the world, because, you know, around 50% of people are always not fully home if they're not making decisions as themselves. If they are, then this is what puts out ripples of awareness into the world. It's what raises consciousness. It's where we're going as a, you know, as a humanity that can become telepathic and able to commune in a whole different way through spirit. It's a different intelligence, but we're not there yet, and we need time. We need time to come into it, into this new spirit. It's where we're going. But life can be so brutal and it can cut us off from this intelligence. Yeah.
If I think about the future of humanity, you know, there's certainly a possibility of we don't have to work anymore because there is actually all provided because of, you know, robots, free energy, whatever have you. There's a possibility that people actually have so much time that they have time to think, that they have time to reflect and really nurture themselves. Of course, there are other realities, but that's certainly like, I think like, well, that would really help our evolvement, because we can study as long as we want, as deep as we want ourselves, you know, our relationships and so on, and just don't feel the pressure of life. Because I've had so many people on this podcast that point to the same problem, and that's modern lifestyle. Humanity is good and humans are good. Most of them are good. But I wouldn't say I'm the best human when I haven't had enough sleep, when I'm irritated or under pressure from work or from my partner. And then I'm meant to guide my child of not doing, I don't know, handstand while, you know, having dinner or something like that. And so that's something that is really avoidable by changing some fundamental, I guess, cornerstones of our current existence. So I relate to that in that way. When you talk about, you know, we are not there yet, you're talking more about the development of humankind, but I'm also looking at like, what are the cornerstones of this life at this moment? And there's some that are about to change. And hopefully we will take that opportunity to change it to the better.
Yeah, and absolutely. Excuse me. And so, you know, and with this, we can be kinder to ourselves and allow our own lifestyle to, you know, be working at the pace that we're built for. And for our children, just by knowing, oh, this child has emotional authority, we can rearrange the way that we ask them to do things or the timing and always give them notice. You know, so an emotional child needs to know, oh, you know, in about half an hour we're going to be doing this, or, you know, in a while this is what I'm going to be, could you do this, you know, in a while. They need time. So it's not like, get up now. It's wake them up before they need to get up. Say, hey, darling, you've got a bit of time. You've got a nice 10 minutes or something, or 15 minutes to lie there and just wake up. Don't go back to sleep. Just let yourself emerge a little bit, and then we're going to get dressed.
That's fascinating.
Really good for an emotional child.
Yeah. Wow. This is that would be such a good good book to write. Yeah. No. Like how to understand a child through human design. Very good.
Yeah. But then there are these other kids they've built their splenic, they're sacral, they're onto it, and you can go, hey, time to get up, and you know, up you get, and you know, up they get, and onto it, and that's actually better for them.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Gee, that's amazing. So, okay, so we have different types. We have the authority, and then there is, how do we call the, like if you're 2-4 or 1-3?
Oh, the profile.
The profile. Yeah. To me, this is really useful. Yeah. Just list them then quickly. I'll give you an example, and then I'll let you expand much more to it. So there are seven, yeah?
No, there's 12. So there's seven authorities.
Got it.
And there's 12 profiles.
Which is combinations of the seven, right?
Combinations of six numbers. So there are six numbers, and there are 12 different combinations of those six numbers. Mm. So, you know, so somebody might be, you know, like a 2-4 or a 6-2 or a 1-3. Mm-hmm. What's your profile?
Opportunist, it's called.
Ah, yes. Yes. Okay, so you're a 2-4. Yeah, so a hermit opportunist. Yeah,
yes.
Is what you are. So the profiles are, so just to give you an example, you know, somebody might be a 1-3, which is an investigator, martyr. Well, they might be a 6-2, which is a role model hermit. I'm a role model hermit. And you're a hermit opportunist, are you? Mm-hmm. You're a 2-4. Mm. Yeah? Mm. Is that right? Yeah. So there's these different combinations of these six themes. And this is like the costume that you wear in life. In a way, it's your modus operandi, your way of kind of operating in the world. And any type could be any of these profiles. So it's, you know, always combined in different ways. It doesn't matter what type you are, you could be any of these profiles. And this is kind of like a flavor or a style. And if you can understand a bit about the themes of your flavor and style, the themes that are the true self themes, the potential, and the themes that are the not self themes when you're operating in your least healthy, least empowered way, well, then you can start to just see the way you're operating in the world and see, okay, so am I kind of in my healthiest version of myself or my least healthiest version? So as an example, you know, you're a 2-4, that hermit opportunist. The two is always has an aspect that needs to withdraw. You know, there's an aspect that needs some privacy, needs some time alone, needs some time to replenish their, you know, the beauty in their lives from an internal place. And that two profile is very choosy about what is a good fit. You know, there are things that are just great, that are aesthetically wrong, that are energetically wrong, but there is a very specific, kind of vibration of things, people, experiences, everything, you know, that really will call to you if you are a line two. There's something that is beautiful, which is your version of beauty. Mm. So if you can get to know that choosiness is something that's taking you on track, something that resonates with you, then this can be, you know, a really helpful aspect in your life. But one of the aspects of this is needing to withdraw and feeling sometimes a bit shy. And if you're really not operating in your healthiest way, you don't really know who you are, then this shyness can become a psychological criticism in our minds. It can start to be a story that tells us, oh, there's something wrong with me. I need to be more forthcoming. Why is it that I need time alone? Why is it that I need to withdraw? There must be something wrong with me. I need to push myself out and amongst people more. I need to be more confident. Maybe I've got some wounding that's made me feel shy. You know, the stories are endless, yeah? And then that same capacity that's really built as a strategy to help you get on track with what's for you then becomes something that derails. You know, and that's true for all of the six lines and the 12 profiles. Yeah, so this is something that we can really get to know and it can help us navigate.
Yeah. I use this a lot to guide my actions. So, you know, being an opportunist overall, like, you know, you can paraphrase it if it's completely wrong, but basically it's not the ideal situation of me walking up to a stranger and introducing myself. And, you know, in terms of podcasts, you know, reaching out to someone and say like, hey, you don't know me, but, you know, I would love you to have, would love you to be on my podcast. And like overall, yeah, that's a normal thing to ask, but I tell you, it does not work really well for me. And it's the same for, if I have to speak to customers or suppliers or something like that, if they don't know me, it seems that I can't really pull it off. It's a very different story, on the other hand, if I get introduced. So I used to do this to the point that I actually ask my colleague, hey, can you call this customer and hand me the phone? I mean, this is sort of tricking the system, but it seems to work because there was that connection. No, and the same as a podcast. True. Like, you know, if there's a connection through just someone else booking it and reaching out and so on, it's, suddenly it's not an issue. And I used to beat myself a lot up for that because I'm confident, you know, successful. It's all got it all going, but still I can't really make small talk with, you know, a person that I don't know. And I've experimented with that. And it doesn't matter who this person is, whether it's the person that is working at the bar or, you know, it's in my room almost, you know, in their hotel, I'm thinking, versus, you know, someone that got introduced, or I'm with someone who can do that. And then suddenly we have a really good thing going. And after that, it's fine. Like, you know, I can be with them one-on-one and we have a really, really good rapport. And it certainly helped me to just know, like, look, it is what it is. Just experiment with that. Find out what works for you. And then, yeah, it just took the self-doubt away. And they're like, man, I'm not good, really good with people. It's not true.
Yeah. It's so good to hear that because that's really true, isn't it? Because you're such a personable guy, you know, you're articulate, you're friendly, and yet, you know, if you didn't know this about yourself, that this is a mechanic, there could be all sorts of undermining that could happen for you, you know. And what you're talking about partly is also the line four, which is the opportunist, which is for, you know, that your network, it's actually personal connections of already knowing people or having someone who knows them that allows this weaving to happen for you. These opportunities then just to have personal contact and in aura contact there's a friendliness that's required to be there. And if that friendliness is kind of inappropriate because you don't know the person at all, then it's a hard starting point, yeah? And so it is, you're absolutely right, that experiment that you're doing with getting people to introduce you and making those connections, this is what allows the infectiousness of this line four, which is what the line four is all about, to kind of transmit something through a woven web. That's one way of thinking about it is you're always looking for the little part of the web that's going to bring you in contact. And where is that joining point that actually brings you into this personal connection? That's really what you're working with. And if you think about it as energy, it's quite helpful.
Yeah, that is good. And I guess, you know, put my daughter against it. I don't know what her type is. You will know when I say what normally happens. She would just go for a walk with us. She's 9 now. And she would strike up conversations to strangers. And, you know, to the point that they sort of like, agreeing to having dinner with us without actually knowing us. It would be something that I would never, be able to pull off unless I'm with someone else who is somehow the catalyst to then make that work. Because, you know, I'm open to have dinner with, you know, people that I meet just on the day. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But it seems almost that's easier for her. It's easier for her to be with people she doesn't know, or at least the initial conversation seems to be just so natural to her. Which type is that again?
Yeah, she's probably a 3-5, or she's got a 5 in her line somewhere, or she's maybe got a 3. You know, it's a little bit like my partner, Mark, who, you know, who, you know, these are people who are designed. If it's a 3-5, then they're designed to bump into strangers. I mean, this is what they're here for, is to bump into strangers, you know, and to just kind of have this conversation, and they have a certain magic and mystery with strangers. And actually it works better for them with strangers than it does with people they know. They can influence the stranger more than they can influence their family member, because it's this mystery and something unknown, and the expectation of the person who doesn't really know them but imagines something about them that allows all that to happen. Yeah, it's a phenomenal thing. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, so helpful to know your children, but also your friends, and how that is. You know, if I could just imagine, if I would have a friend who would be like that, and we might not see each other very often, then we would go down the street and say, like, okay, let's have a meal, and then they strike up a conversation with the waiter or with people just in the street, that they're just, you know, waiting for the traffic lights to change, and in that time they already made a friend there. And if you accept that this is just part of their personality, then I guess you can work with it, you can accept it more. And well, maybe you have a strategy of going somewhere where there are no people. We have a picnic at the beach where no one else is, and that's fine too, right? But, you know, like overall, like there's certainly an understanding of like, you're different. Got it.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, certain things are healthy for those people. Those people sitting at home alone too much can get quite flat, because there isn't this stimulation from these people they don't know.
Wow. That they need to get to know all of these people that they don't
know. Yeah, people often end up having jobs that help them live the most healthy version of their profile. You know, so somebody who has a job where they're out with strangers a lot and have to just, you know, talk to people they don't even know, well, then that's great if they're like a 3-5 profile or 5-1 or something like that. But that's terrible for somebody who has to have kind of a long courtship and really get to know someone really personally in depth before they can be effective, if you like.
That's great. I've never looked like that, like whether you're a tour guide or even a doctor that constantly sees strangers because they want to help. If they can build a rapport fast, that means also they get to the truth of what's going on fast. Yeah, or psychologists, all of these things, or practitioners in general. Fantastic. Thanks. I never thought about it that way. Yeah. There's more to human design, and I don't want to go, of course, through all the different channels, but basically there are two maps of the body. One is a conscious and one is an unconscious one. We don't have to talk too much about conscious or unconscious, but I do want to give the listeners just a little bit of a taste of how deep you can go with human design and how helpful that can be, right? And that's really like, there's a map of the body that tells you whether something is switched on in you or not, and whether a group of channels, as they're called, are switched on or not. Can you give a simple example of a person that has something switched on versus not switched on to give a little bit of a taster of how clear you can become of where your strength lies or not?
So as an example, there are people who have so a channel is a runs between two centers, right? So if you have two centers defined, there is always a channel that's running between them. So one example is the channel of that is all about concentrating, and it's the channel 9, 52, 9. It's right down at the bottom of the body graph, and it's all about this groundedness to be deeply engaged in, you know, have your energy deeply engaged and concentrating and really focusing and being able to go deeply into the inner stillness of you, taking all your attention into something. And this can, you know, if somebody's got this channel, then they need to have a full focus that they can put their attention into, and they love diving deep into something and really, you know, step by step working their way through it and not being distracted. And so this ability to do that, if you have that in your design, then it is so important to be healthy and to deal with your stress that you get to have that focus. And if you have this in your design and you have a job where you're having to multitask and switch between things and you never get to go deep and you never get this feeling of deep satisfaction that you're really working through something, then there'll be no joy and no inner stillness and you're going to be very stressed. So there are some people who are designed for the opposite. They need all that variety. They need to be switching and changing and moving from one thing to the next. But, if once you start to understand the combination of channels, because people are always, you know, most people will have more than one channel. There are 36 channels in the body graph and, you know, some people might have 13 of them or something like that, you know. So we are, this is really at the level of what is happening in your chemistry and the way that your body and your psychology operate. How does your energy actually move through your design? And all of it is linked to language. And I guess this is what I want to say about human design. Human design is a language that is keyed into the amino acids in your DNA. And that language is language that was delivered as part of the human design transmission when it was brought to Earth, it came through a voice. And that language is very, very specific to your genetic makeup and your psychological makeup and needs to be transmitted by someone who speaks the language of human design. Because like with all modalities, there has been the potential or the practice out there of people seeing this language of human design, and some of it's quite unusual. Thinking, I'll just change the words and I'm going to make my new version of human design with different language. And that language goes in through your aura and talks to your cells. And if it's the wrong language for what you've actually got encoded in your design, it's actually interrupting the messages in your design. So the more positive way of saying it would be that when you have your codes, which are in your design, transmitted through the language, which is accurate to your design, then it goes in through your aura and talks to yourself, and awakens your genetic material in such a way that if you then experiment with your design, you're aligning to your potential. And this is, you know, what a human design reading is. It's actually a reading at a genetic cellular level and a psychological level, who you have the potential to be. And receiving that and listening to it helps some kind of resonance happen inside of your body and being. It helps you, if you experiment with it, start on a path to that alignment.
So that way, if I understand you right, then without having had a reading, it's difficult, if not impossible, to really study human design and really to understand it, even though it might be an official book that has the right wording. Yeah,
I mean, the thing is that if you do study it and learn about it and read about it, you get a whole lot of bits, you know, so you get the bits, but you don't necessarily get your recipe, you know, your particular personal instructions woven together, because of course, you know, there's 64 different, what we call gates in the body graph, which is 64 different archetypes. There's 36 different channels. There's 9 different centers. There's 12 different profiles. There's 7 different authorities and 4 different types and 300 and something before, I think, incarnation crosses, which is the purpose for your life. And, of course, your personal instructions are a very unique map of that. And so if people are serious about really wanting to know their personal instructions, it's really better to have a reading from a qualified human design analyst or teacher because they do all that work for you. Yes, you can go in and just look at your aura type and your, you know, your type and your authority, and that's going to be helpful. You know, the mechanics of that is going to be really helpful for you. So you don't necessarily have to have a reading in order to get started. But I do tend to suggest to people, if they're really into it, rather than spending hours and hours and hours on the internet trying to come up with their design, they're really better just to invest in a reading. Because there's some great information on the internet, and there's also some information which is been changed so much that it's really going to be less helpful and sometimes damaging. So, you know, it's like anything out there, you know, people do all sorts of things with it. And, you know, there's the potential for real health and well-being from getting something that's accurate.
So this is a little bit of controversial thought, but I just want to, so basically, if you really, really get human design, you fully understand who you are, you can act, you know, in this life really on mission, on personality and all the rest of it. If everyone would do that, would that be a little bit of cheating? Because that would actually mean we not necessarily figure it out, but we actually would just follow a particular strategy to, you know, create, I guess, what some people would say heaven on earth. But then I guess it's complicated enough to not think that way. Huh? I could just pretend that there's a school of thought that would say, look, you know, when you come into life, the whole meaning of life is to experience it and just to figure it out as much and take the learnings. If you would get such guidance about yourself, then you would compromise yourself on some learnings. I could also say it's such a mess.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, you know, so the thing about human design is it gives you, if you follow your strategy, which is your decision-making strategy, and your authority, which is your place to make decisions from in your body or process, then you get the experiences that you're built for. Now, not all those experiences are going to be wonderful. A lot of them will be challenges. But those challenges are the ones that you're built for, which are going to increase your potential. Whereas if you're not living your design, you are going to get challenges and you're also going to get many experiences, but a lot of those are going to be things that you're actually not built for, which will then undermine your potential. So we're not saying that you find your human design and then your life is perfect and you never have anything difficult and that nothing ever goes wrong. We're not saying that. What we're saying is, there is a life that you're built for, and that's going to have a lot of different things in it, and you're going to still learn and grow and be having to deal with the rough and tumble of life, but it's your life that you're equipped for.
Yeah. No, that makes good sense. Thanks for clarifying that. There's one other aspect that I was thinking of, if we can touch on that. And that would be the conscious versus unconscious. So they are really, and the other thing is having two people that sort of are in the same space, because at that moment they complement each other potentially and some channels are switched on. So maybe start with that, because to me that's fairly simple. So if we talk about the same channel that, you know, requires you to deep dive and research and enjoy that really sort of deep work. If a child of mine doesn't have that, but I have that, and school just prescribes, got to do that, got to do the research, this would take an hour, you really have to focus on one topic and you have to go really deep. But actually they don't have that channel, which means it's not natural to them. By me sitting in their space, meaning like within 6 meters of their presence, do I switch on that skill to the degree that they can actually operate as if they would be me?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We all bring to each other different aspects that we have defined, other than reflectors, because we don't have anything defined. But all the other types that will always be bringing their definition to other people. And then it's the question, okay, so we can all borrow and use other people's definition because we get access to it and we amplify it, right? And that's fine. It is conditioning, so it's influence that's not us. We can learn about it. The most important thing is not to get identified with it. Mm-hmm. Because wherever we get identified with something that's not us, because we've borrowed it and we've borrowed it so much that we think it's us, we end up with a problem when it goes away. Because we think there's something wrong with us when it goes away. And, of course, it goes away when the other person goes away. And then we try to get it. Like, for example, I shared a room with my sister until I was she went to university. She was 2 years older than me, so I would have been 15 or 16 when she left, probably 15. She had a defined head and ajna, so that's the, you know, the mental, intellectual, academic processing unit, the thinking mind. And also she was a generator type, so she had the energy to do it. And she was a great student. You know, she was an A student, and I shared a room with her. And we used to study together. So, you know, for all these years while I was going through school and high school, you know, I had this great academic record, and I was such a great student, and I got fantastic grades. And then she went to university. Then it all fell apart for me. Like suddenly I just didn't have this energy to sit there and study. I didn't really have the focus to mentally put it all in. And I remember when my parents went to my parent-teacher interviews in my sixth form year, my second to last year of school, you know, they said, thank goodness you've come, you know, because normally it had been, oh, Christine, she's such a model student. But this time it was, thank goodness you've come. We don't know what's happened to Christine. We don't know where she's gone. All her grades are sliding. You know, we're in trouble here. We've got to do something. What is happening at home? Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Reminds me, I read biographies quite a bit, in autobiographies, and sometimes there are key moments where partnerships break up, like of the publicist, of the partner in that business, you know, where people just separate or opposite, you know, suddenly someone comes into a person's life and things that they wanted to achieve are suddenly obtainable. And you know, to your point, that might be not really what their strategy is anyway, but there's certainly these switches that people seem to do when they come into people's life. And you know, from a human design point of view, that makes a lot of sense. It's more than just ideas that people offer to you, and then you write this amazing song. It might be actually that you're inspired on an energetic level, because they open up certain channels that let you experience that, and then write a song or whatever. It might be a business idea.
Yeah, and of course, when you come into relationship, into aura with another person, there's your two individual designs, but it creates the third thing. So you have a third energy dynamic, which is the relationship chart, which is also something I do, which is read relationship charts. And that dynamic is something where, you know, there can be chemistry, which is when one person's got half of a channel and the other person's got half of a channel, and then suddenly a full channel is created where neither person had that full capacity, but together they get it, you know. And this is called chemistry, of course, and that chemistry can either be, you know, attracting chemistry, or can be repelling chemistry. And, you know, and there's all sorts of other aspects in the human design chart of partnerships. And, of course, this is important because it's about the way we interact. And as long as we know what is conditioning and what is us, as long as we know who we are and we get into that relationship correctly through making a correct decision, then that is an energy dynamic we're here to explore in our life. You know, this is part of our karma, or part of our, you know, part of something that is, you know, part of our personal destiny. Human design is really not just about you uniquely in your own little bubble. It's really about the way that relationships work or don't, and could be improved and with more awareness. Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit, and that will be my last question around the system, because, I mean, there's so much to explore. But when it comes to conscious versus unconscious, the way that I understand it is that I might have a skill that everyone else seems to be really obviously know about, because it's so obvious about me. But if it is talking about the research thing again, if that is an unconscious channel, which is the channel that I'm not aware of, does that mean that I don't mm-hmm. even understand that I'm good in it, but I just do it anyway? But, you know, I don't understand it. If people would say, oh, you're really good in studying, I would then deny it or say, like, surely not. Like, you know, I'm not really good in this. Does it only apply to certain channels where it's really obvious the difference?
No. So, you know, so the thing is that, yes, other people can often see what's unconscious in you and you can't necessarily. But so you might not consciously think about yourself like that, but if you can just start to watch your behavior, you can become aware of it, you know. So these are things which in your earlier life might be blind spots where you completely don't see it, but you do act it out. And then someone highlights it to you, or you might see it in your chart, or, you know, someone gives you some feedback and you start to think, oh, do I do that? Do I behave in that way? And then you start to see yourself behaving in that way, and then you can see it. Then it's, that's my unconscious at work. I can kind of see it. Still don't really think about myself like that so much, but I can kind of start to become aware of it. Yeah,
exactly. Like using the mirror of others to pointing something out, or the evidence actually, like, well, my record actually shows that I am good in this, versus like acknowledging, like, of course I know this, versus just empirical evidence. Yeah. Like, yes, I'm good at that. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. And it's very nice, because there's some good features. Like, I think of everyone was like, no, you know, if you look at your chart and like, oh, great, got that skill too. I'm not aware of it, but at least I got it, which is means it's still accessible to me. It's just not the awareness there.
Yeah. And this is often what can be so empowering about human design, having a reading and getting it transmitted, is that, you know, sometimes it really affirms something about us that we sort of kind of knew, but when we have it pointed out, somehow we get more access to it. And particularly if that is your authority, you know, because for some people our authority, you know, the place that we're designed to navigate from is unconscious. And that does mean we have to really get in touch with our bodies to feel it, because our mind doesn't really think about our authority. We, you know, our mind doesn't notice that we just had a response. But actually, if we use our mind to pay attention to our body and what's going on in the body, we start to notice the energy and we go, that's what that is. That's my authority. That's my inner truth telling me this is it, you know. That can be so helpful for people. Mm. Yeah. You know, we just have all these capacities that can be hidden from us until we have them pointed out. It's half conscious and half unconscious.
Amazing. Christine, this has been really, really informative. I love what wealth of knowledge you are and how much experience you have. And you can really back that up as examples too, which makes it really easy to listen and understand what you're actually talking about. I think it's a complex topic, and you're one of the world's experts in this, because you've been studying for so long and practicing for so long. And I feel really, really grateful that you have spent more than an hour, or hour and a half actually, with us explaining this. I would love to have you on again, actually.
Yeah, it's such a juicy topic. And look, thank you for inviting me to come and talk about it, because I love sharing it. And, you know, and we are part of a network, Ceci. You know, we've known each other before. And so hopefully that was then, you know, something where we've made another, just renewed a connection. And that's how things are meant to work for you. So then it's beautiful for me, because I get to just reflect that and enjoy talking to you. So thank you so much for inviting me for that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, just to put a spotlight again on sort of how people can connect with you, and I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Of course, the in-person courses that you do, they are normally mostly in New Zealand, I believe, but they are probably my favorite, because you really experience on a bodily, you know, like in-person training with others where you're exactly at, and you're a great facilitator there. And then we have online consultation, which is something that I've been done with you, especially since I've been moving away from New Zealand. And then you now have online courses, which I'm really, really excited about as well. And that all of that can be found under humandesign.co.nz, correct? Do you want to add anything, sort of how people can reach out or what they can expect? Just a couple of words, sort of like of encouragement.
Yeah, just that, you know, I love working with each person who finds me. And so if you do want to jump on my website and just get a bit of a taste, you know, there's a bit of information there and there's some videos that you can see me talking a little bit about human design. And there's lots of options. So just see what resonates with you. And if you feel moved to, then I'd love to hear from you and work with you, helping you towards your most empowered self and the life that you're built for.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to see you. Bye-bye.
Lovely.
We hope you got a lot out of today's inspiring conversation. Please share this episode with someone you know needs to hear it. Whether they are a seasoned health expert or just beginning their wellness journey, these stories of remarkable transformation, success, and valuable insights will certainly help empower more people. Until next time, have the best life ever.